Canto 4. Into my soundly dreaming head there broke a sudden thunder so loud that I shook like one shaken awake. When I awoke, with sight restored, I rose and took a look around me, keen to know where I might be. I and my guide, the man who wrote the book on quests and questions, doubts and destiny. And true it was that I was on the edge of the great pit of the piteous abyss, where sad cries have the dubious privilege of gathering in perpetual synthesis, and griefs already infinite are by their own great number multiplied to swell uproar to an eruption. It was hell. And as it sounded, so it looked, all bad. Even the clouds were dark. I couldn't tell how far it went down. It was deeply sad. "Now we descend into the sightless well," my poet said, and paused. His cheeks were pale. "First me, then you." And I, at having seen him, seemed to flinch, said, "How shall I not fail? If this scares you, when usually you've been the one to calm my fears." And he to me, "It is the anguish of those locked below that paints my face with pity. What you see and fear is something else. It's time to go. A long road calls." And thus, compelled by him who had compelled himself, I took a breath and entered the first ring around the rim of that great wellhead's endless wall of death. I was in Circle 1. To the extent that I could hear at all cries were sighs. The air without end shook to the lament, not just of men and women. With surprise, I saw young children, too. Why were they sent? I thought. And once again my master saw into my mind and said, "You do not ask who these ones are, why here, and by what law. I'll tell you before we resume our task of pain without a sin. But though they be ever so virtuous, no unbaptized souls are exempted from this penalty. And if they lived before his son, they prized God insufficiently. And I was one of those. For such defects, and for no crime more grave, we're lost. For something left undone, we're doomed to live without hope for all time." When I heard this, a great grief seized my heart, because I knew that people of much worth in ancient sciences and every art had been sent down by accident of birth to limbo. "Tell me, master, for I must know this," I begged him, needing to be told my faith was not just powerful, but just. "Has even one of all this place can hold ever got out, by merit of his own or someone else's grace, to join the blessed?" And he, aware of the doctrinal bone I picked at, said, "I had not joined the rest down here for long, when someone of true power, crowned with a blaze of glory, came to choose from this tremendous garden, flower by flower, the lucky few from all he would refuse. Plucked from the dark and lifted to the light were Adam, Abel, Noah, Moses, he who gave the law and kept the law in sight, and Abraham the patriarch was free, King David, Jacob, Isaac and their seed, and Rachel, for whom Jacob 40 years worked out the price and thereby proved his need. And there were many others left their tears behind and went to be beatified. But never before them was human soul delivered out of here," so said my guide. But saying so, did not pause in his role of leader. We continued passing through the forest, thick with spirits. Not so far from where I'd slept, I noticed something new. Ahead of us, beginning as a bar of light, it swelled to form a hemisphere of fire that through the shadows burned a dome, and from a good way off I guessed that here some honorable people had their home. "My sage, so honored in all fields of art and science, who are these that by such light are honored too, all others set apart?" And he to me, "Divine grace shines its bright approval on them for the fame they earned, and still have in the world by what they made. Here glory burns again as there it burned. A voice inside the radiant arcade responded with a ringing antiphon. All hail the greatest poet, for his shade returns that we had thought was gone. When silence had come back to fill the space, the voice had left when it went still. I saw four great shades come towards us, and each face was neither glad nor sad. My guide said more. Behold the one with upright sword in hand. He walks by right before the other three. For he is Homer, who put his Greek brand on all the Romans, not excluding me. If you could read him, you would understand why we who can verge on idolatry in praising him. Horace the satirist is that one there, then Ovid, Lucan last. Because that voice put my name on its list with these, it did me honor unsurpassed. So I saw gathered the immortal school of him who sang below the walls of Troy, and over all who write shall always rule like a watchful eagle in its high employ, spreading its wings on winds we know are there, only because it glides across the sky so easily, as if born in the air, and never to descend, even to die. And after they had talked a little while, they turned, with signs of fellowship, to me. Whereat I saw my master broadly smile, and still more honor from that company. They said that I was with them from now on, sixth of their school, the College of the Wise. And so it was, until the light was gone. We walked and talked of what I must surmise were best left unsaid now. But when said then was fit, and dare I say it, flattering. Such words I hardly hope to hear again, but just to hear them once meant everything. Surrounded seven times by one high wall inside another, plus a pretty stream as moat, a castle noble, strong and tall, now stood before us. As if in a dream, we walked across the water. Seven gates I passed through with my five wise ones, until we reached a fresh green lawn. The ancient greats awaited us. Their eyes were grave and still, their features full of calm authority. Sparely they spoke, in voices sweet and soft. There were so many that to count them we withdrew to a well-lighted place aloft. From there, above the green enamel, I looked down on each and every face of fame, the sight of which I'd been exalted by already, only now I heard the name. Electra, whose beloved son built Troy, and whose companion saw it end in flame or died defending it. I heard with joy that this was Hector, this Aeneas. There, just as essential for a later age, was Caesar with his griffin's fiery stare. Princess Camilla stood at center stage with Penthesilea, the warlike queen of the Amazons, she whom Achilles slew. And the king of Latium was on the green, as was Lavinia his daughter. Who would not be moved to know this was the first Brutus, the one who laid proud Tarquin low? Lucrezia, wife of Collatine, well versed in grace, and Caesar's daughter whom we know as wife to Pompey, the chaste Julia. And Marcia, Cato's wife, Cornelia too, daughter to Scipio of Africa and mother of the Gracchi. Names I knew only from books, without reserve revealed how they had looked, except the Saladin. Sadly by robes of shadow part concealed, he helped our age of learning to begin, but had another faith. Lifting my gaze a little, one I saw who sat in state among the family of philosophers, their father of all thinkers the most great, Aristotle. Looking up to him in praise, like all the others, even Socrates and Plato who preceded him, were each lost in their awe of his abilities at amplifying what they'd had to teach, the moral law. There was Democritus, who said the world is made of tiny parts that interact by chance unseen by us, Diogenes and Anaxagoras, Thales, Empedocles were side by side, and Heraclitus, who said any mass, even if still, still moves. There, in his pride, was Zeno, Stoicism's founding voice, and next to him was Dioscorides, the herb collector. I was spoiled for choice. Where next to look among these prodigies? And I saw Orpheus and Cicero, Linus and Seneca the moralist, Euclid and Ptolemy. There in a row were famous adepts first to get the gist of modern medicine and help it grow. Hippocrates and Galen with the two Arabs who led the world in this respect. Avicenna, then Averroes, who wrote down what both could conjure and confect in his commentary that none doubts to be true. And these, and all those others on the lawn, so many giants of the intellect, were like the first sun rays that build the dawn. I can't speak fully of them all. My theme is vast, and drives me on so that the facts often exhaust my words. Again a team of two, we entered into cataracts of trembling air, all quietness left behind, where no light shines, and all who see are blind.